Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where I do know what we talk about here. We do talk for the last 7 years about trying to invest like the best investor in the world, Warren Buffett, and his sidekick, Charlie Munger, and the rulers who have been following those guys. We call them rulers because Warren says there's only one rule of investing, and that's rule number one. Don't lose money. We've talked about that quite a lot.
Indeed.
Don't lose money.
Indeed.
And man, I lost some money.
What do you mean?
Yeah, I lost some money. I hate it.
Should we stop recording and you tell me this offline?
No.
Tell me online then.
Yeah.
Tell all of our millions of listeners.
I did all this work on Alibaba, right?
Yeah.
And then we sold it.
You did all this work on Alibaba and then where's the buying part? So you bought it.
We bought it. And then we sold it. And the
quickly.
Reason we sold it, yeah. It was terrible. I didn't want to sell it. We had it at a good price. It's still at a good price. But we're talking about risks last time. And
yeah,
what we faced with this thing is the risk. Like, people are concerned about what China was going to do. You know, they have a totalitarian government and they sort of could do whatever they want to do, really. I mean, it's not a democracy. Mm-hmm. So the risk there is that thought to be about Alibaba that you have to overcome is whether the Chinese government is going to continue to have a capitalistic side, continue to, you know, push forward free enterprise, or whether they're just going to nationalize everything down the road.
Yeah. Definitely. Right. That is the gigantic conversation around Chinese companies.
Yep. And so, you know, I read the biographies, I read, you know, study, and came to the conclusion that it's very unlikely that they would back away from what they were doing the last 20 years. So we got comfortable with China and mm-hmm. kind of encouraged about China and kind of excited about China and kind of thinking, wow, China's really coming into its own in the world. And, Ray Dalio has written extensively about how China is inevitably going to push back on American sort of empire that sits out in the Pacific and goes all the way, you know, Guam, Philippines, that whole thing, Japan, and, you know, South Korea, just kind of all right on the edge of China as a result of World War II and Korea and Vietnam. Just all these wars America has been in. And, you know, I think Dalio says it's inevitable that China pushes back on that and starts to influence. And then you have one way you can go, one or two ways. You can, as an America, you can push back and get into a hot war with a power that's growing and will go to war. And that's traditionally what happens, is that these two empires, one coming up and one coming down in terms of power and influence, clash in a very violent battle, and the world suffers for it.
It's possible, yeah.
Yep, so that's one way it could go. And then the other way it could go is that the power that is declining recognizes the power that's coming up and tries to partner with them and make for a peaceful transition and share power in the world the way Great Britain and America did.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you can go a couple different ways, and it just depends on whether you want to be friends or not. And America has chosen to push back on China in some pretty harsh ways. And the result is a potential for a shooting war over Taiwan right now. And we don't know if that's going to happen. What we do know is if anything like that does happen, we saw with what happened in Ukraine, that the American government stepped in and crushed the Russian stock investments.
Got where you're going with this. Okay.
Overnight. Yeah. Literally overnight, things went to zero. And so we do not want that to happen to us. We thought the problem was going to be China. It's not going to be China. It's going to be America. Our own government is going to be the one that creates the real problem for investing in Chinese stocks. And this is so frustrating because the SEC has had kind of a hit list of Chinese stocks out there for years now, warning them they're going to delist them if they don't go through the American approved audit of its auditors.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chinese government has pushed back and said, you don't have any control over who audits our auditors over here. You know, so back off. And
so to be clear, these are not companies listed directly on a U.S. stock exchange. They're listed in China. And thus...
No, they're actually listed on the U.S. stock exchange as usually VIEs, which is a kind of a strange bird that was invented by somebody who wanted to buy Chinese stocks and was not being allowed to because China won't let American investors buy their stocks directly.
Right. And those companies are not actually listed on U.S. stock exchanges. They're like, you're not buying their actual stock when you buy those.
When you buy Baba,
yeah,
you know, Alibaba or Tencent, you're not buying the actual stock. What you're buying is an ownership of a strange corporation that's headquartered in the Caymans. And you own the net income and all the net assets. You own all of that stuff because the company has pledged it all to this VIE version of itself. And this is to get around the Chinese regulations that said you can't have an American investor.
Yeah. And so this is why a U.S. regulator would have, this is why the Chinese government is saying you have no jurisdiction over a Chinese company listed on a Chinese stock exchange, not a U.S. stock exchange. And so basically like bug off.
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, really, I'm not quite sure how the U.S. justifies this sort of intrusion into Chinese affairs. I mean, imagine if China said, no, you have to use our auditor to audit all of your CPA companies. I mean, that's what this argument's about. It's the auditor of the auditors. It's not even it's not even a problem with the auditors. It's the problem with the auditor of the auditors. And they don't have one that the SEC trusts. And they've had so many Chinese companies turn out to be frauds that were listed in the United States.
Yeah.
We're talking like a dozen of them or something. So I kind of get it why they would do that. But they've now just recently, last week or two, come to an agreement of sorts. They're saying that they're going to smooth this over. So here we are.
Wait, say that one more time.
The SEC and the Chinese government have come to some form of compromise.
Oh, interesting.
Over this issue. It hasn't.
This is news to me.
Clear
tell
yet
me
about what it is. I don't know yet. I just saw that basically a news lead that said, yeah, it looks like they're going to compromise.
Yeah, so well, you were definitive. Saying, like, I don't know why China even entertains this, but the reason is obvious. It's the incredible economic power that U.S. investors hold. So China sort of doesn't want American investment, but totally does.
Totally
and
does.
Everybody understands that dichotomy and the double facedness that's happening here. So that's why China's trying to work it out without sounding like they're giving anything away.
Well, as a result of this, I took what I thought was a 6-inch bar, which was, you know, our team went over to China and really studied Alibaba and JD and JD.com and really liked them and just felt like, yeah, we really understand these companies well enough to invest. And now it's like, except for this, what we classically call legislative risk, which is government risk, government coming in out of the blue and blowing you up. And that happens out there. So I got caught in a risk that I didn't really see. I thought I was studying the government risk, but I was studying the wrong one. I should have been studying the American government's reactions to war, which can be very, very intense.
Okay.
So
hold on
a
second.
Are. There's my risk.
I need a slight backup here. So you started this out saying I lost money on Alibaba and I'm super bummed about it. You bought at a certain price. You have now sold due to discovering, just to lead into our theme that we've been doing, discovering that your inversion, what would you say, like had not been...
Was incomplete.
Okay, good. Or not even that it was incomplete, because I think you probably did what you could with the information you had at the time, but then new information came out. So as you tell me constantly, the story changed. And you created a new inversion with the new information, which is exactly what you have been teaching me to do over and over and over.
Yes.
So then you sold this stock at a loss. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
And you did so because you did not want to have your money in that story anymore.
That's right.
True?
That's it.
This does 100%. Not sound to me like an I'm bummed, I lost money situation, I have to say. This sounds to me like perfect, follow the rules, investing.
Oh, it is. It is perfect in the sense of textbook.
Yeah.
But the textbooks never tell you what it feels like.
They don't, but that's the torture of the investing practice, is that we are not computers, we're not the textbook. And it's really hard to make the textbook decision. It's actually not that hard to make the textbook decision. Often the decision is very clear. It's hard to carry it out.
Yeah, you have to be pretty cold-blooded.
You have to be pretty cold-blooded, yeah.
To not fall back on hope and wishing.
Yeah,
which are not part of Rule One investing, and have as a result of really learning this well, I think, I can count these kinds of losses over a 40-year period on like one hand, and they don't happen very often.
Just to get a further learning out of this, so what I imagine a lot of people would do. Certainly what I would feel very inclined to do is say to myself, good job, self. I have followed my strategy. I have rewritten my story, rewritten my inversion. Don't like this company anymore. Too risky. Awesome. Decision made. Now, when do I sell? Do I wait for the price to go up? Because I bet you the price is going to go up at some point. People are so excited. Charlie Munger bought it, but then maybe sold it. And I don't know what's happening, and it's probably going to go up, and I'll just wait because now I've made my decision. Mm-hmm. But I would rather not lose money, and it'll probably go up.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have any of those thoughts? And corollary question, how long did it take between decision made and pressing the sell button?
Pretty short period of time, and no, I really didn't entertain that alternative strategy, which is to hope it would go up.
I think that's a stretch to call it a strategy.
you could make a case for it. I mean, you did. I mean, there is a good chance that the rest of the world won't see this the way I'm seeing it, and you know they will continue to buy Baba, and especially now that the SEC looks like it's kind of backing away. So it like very likely, of course, none of those things were known at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So my discipline is that when the story changes, then the investment must change and do it now. It's
do
like
you,
waiting around.
So what does that mean? Like you sold it within the next hour? I mean, you probably had to take a few days to unload
it was a decision to sell it. And yeah, it took a little time to get out of the position.
Okay.
But it was time to exit, and so we exited.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And that discipline has come from another situation where one could take the same point of view, that, oh, we've discovered this flaw and now we should get out, and we won't because we think this will go back up, and it goes to zero.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, taking
Wait, say that again. So on Horsehead, which is what you're obviously talking about.
Yeah.
Had you had that decision?
No.
I didn't think so. Exited. Yeah.
I just speculative. If I had seen the flaw that was there,
Oh, I got you. Okay.
I would have, and then had stayed in anyway, hoping for a moment to exit when it went up.
Yeah.
There was no moment. It never did. It just gradually went down. And so that, you know, I guess probably with Baba, Baba is a very different situation in that I'm seeing risk that most investment managers are not seeing. They're staying in it, obviously, quite a large number of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a good probability that that company would go back up sometime from the low position where I sold it. And so perhaps if I'm learning something from just talking with you about this, it might have been reasonable to hang in there.
I was not actually making a real argument.
I don't think it's a good idea. I think it just requires that you hope. And I hate the idea of hoping.
I was describing it as a fallacy that I would sort of automatically be subjected to by my own feelings/brain/optimism, but I didn't think you would actually take it seriously.
it's not a good choice, right?
Like,
it
hurts
that badly to lose money. It really does. When it really hurts, and it hurts really badly when you've done all the work and the work says this is a great company, and they're so, you know, it's particularly in this market, it's been so difficult to find great companies that are on sale. So that was, that's why you're human. I mean, I'm human. I honestly have to entertain this notion that, oh shoot, I maybe could have done that better and not taken a permanent loss of capital. And then I just think, no, don't go to a strategy of hope. That's not a good idea. Really not a good idea.
It's not a good idea because sometimes it works and that reinforces the wrong behaviors.
And sometimes it doesn't.
And you don't hear about those. Right. And as you always say, rule number one is don't lose money, because those it doesn't works, those quote it doesn't work times can sink you, can go to zero. Like you just said,
kind of this guy, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, you and me, but one of our students who got kind of deep into the options world and really loved doing relatively low risk options trades, put, you know, I think $10,000 into a relatively low risk options trade, and it went bad, as they will do. You're going to have trades that go bad. And exiting that should have cost him no more than $3,000 if he followed the rules. But his emotions got a hold of him, and he just started to hope that this stock should turn around. It should have, right? It was definitely worth more than the current price. So it should have turned around. And instead of taking the loss, he hung in there and got himself in a position where the entire $10,000 was going to be lost. And so he called and just was like, he was literally crying to your uncle and just saying, I really don't know what to do. And Jeff just told him, look, there's nothing you can do. Just learn the lesson and be glad it wasn't worse. The guy got off that phone call and went on to do the really terrible thing, which was to not just double down, but to, what is it when you multiply your risk by five, whatever that number is? It's not quadruple, it's the next
quintuple.
One. Quintuple. So in order to escape from this negative 10,000, he quintupled his risk to 50,000 and changed the options trade.
Oh God.
Now he's got 50,000. The market in this stock
is like
going
when
down.
They ask you those qualifying surveys when you open an options account, like this is why.
This is why. right? So now he's got 50,000 at risk, and it keeps going down against him, as often happens. And he did it again, quintupled again. Now it's 250,000 at risk.
What?
Yeah. And
wait a second. So he has that kind of money in, available in his investing account, whatever.
No, he took the money from his daughter's college account.
Okay, I have no words. I feel so uncomfortable right now.
This is what happens when people get desperate and emotional. I mean, if 10,000 was going to be a terrible loss.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you had 250, like, you know, okay, you lose 10, you move on. Oh.
Yeah. So here's what happened next is the market turned around. And he got out of the trade without losing any money. He got all of it back.
Wow.
Right?
Thank the good Lord on behalf of his child.
Yeah.
Not on behalf of his investing practice.
No. And here's the next thing that happened. As happens when you have one of these things. This guy was so euphoric over his great strategy of avoiding this loss that he wrote this up and put it out on a major website, posted it up, and literally hundreds of people have thanked him for now knowing how to avoid a loss in an options trade.
This makes me so physically uncomfortable.
This is absolutely how and why 90, like in a study in Washington State, they found that 99% of the options traders who trade long options and get themselves in high risk positions lose all their money. And it's because of this. In options trading and in life in general, your first loss is usually your best loss, and it gets worse from there. So the point...
I think that's funny about life in general. I'm not sure what that means exactly. I have to think about that one.
You have to think about it. But in general, you know, having hope as a way of approaching a problem is just a really bad idea. It's so much better to have a real structure, strategy, and a discipline to stay with it. And that's what keeps you doing this for 40 years instead of 40 weeks.
Yeah.
Is that discipline that says, no, I'm not going to consider hoping that this will fix itself. I'm just gone and I'll take my loss and I'll move on and make it back somewhere else. I think Guy Spier told me once, you know, I love this. I've heard this from other people, but I think Guy just remembered or just reminded me, and that is, you don't have to make it back the way you lost it.
Hmm.
And that's an important thing to remember. Trying to make it back in the company that
in the same
you lost
company.
It in can be very dangerous. Why not just go over there and find something that actually is better? Hmm. You know, that does have all the qualities you want. And you don't miss one major one, right? So I guess that's my little lesson for this.
I'm glad we talked about this instead of picking up at economic risk, because I think this is much more about the real risk that we all worry about. Like, yeah, we can, and it's very important. I'm not saying it's not to talk about the specific risks in a company, but I really think the real risk is ourselves.
The real risk is ourselves. And one of the things that makes Warren Buffett and his students so good at this is this kind of rational discipline, not taking an emotional risk and not or trying not to take emotional risk. And Charlie, they say it different kinds of ways, right? One of the ways Charlie says it is, we just have been very successful in avoiding investing in things we don't understand. You know, we try to know what we don't know. And when you've got an investment where you should have known something and didn't, that's where you didn't know what you didn't know. Like, I didn't know that I didn't know enough about the American government reaction to China.
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, nobody knew that was a strong possibility. I think it was something somebody could have theorized, but that they actually did it, this is new.
Yeah, it is new.
But as soon as you started saying, I sold this company and lost money, I immediately thought of Buffett at his annual meeting, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago, very recent. And he had just sold, and I don't remember the company, but people who follow Berkshire, I'm sure will know, there was some company that he had owned very briefly, like under a year, found out something new about it once he owned it and got into the headquarters and really got on the ground with it. And I was just going to, like, I thought of the airline one, but I think it was a different one than the airline one. But the airline one is another great example.
It's another one where he didn't, he found out on hindsight.
Yeah. And I just, it was something that we hadn't really particularly pinpointedly talked about. And so when he said, like, it was obvious, like, it wasn't a big thing to him. It was obvious. I found this out, so I sold it. And he moved on.
Yeah.
And I just remember sitting there, like, listening to him. I was not in the room. This was on the video meeting, whatever. So it must have been fairly recent. I just was so struck by that. Like, he was just so, he took the loss. He moved on. He has taken losses so many times over the years. And nobody ever talks about them. And because nobody ever talks about them, unless you're a Buffett scholar, you don't know that that happens. It's just not said. It's like, it's not in his bio that he has multiple times lost small amounts of money on various companies that were mistakes. That's not in his bio. But it has happened. And it doesn't affect what he's done. And so what I took from that, like a truck hitting me, was as soon as he saw something different, as soon as the story changed, as you say, he took action. He didn't wait around. He didn't hope it out like my instinct would be. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if, let's say the airline example, if he had held on to those airlines, and I don't know where he bought it at, but they're doing better, so maybe he would now be making money on them. So you could say that was a mistake to sell, right? And a lot of people would look at that and just straight up pluses and minuses would say that was a mistake. You should have held on. You could have made money and then sold it.
That's a wonderful example.
But he doesn't care because it's not worth the risk and it's not worth the effort, mental energy, time that he puts into his ownership of companies. So I think, this is my guess because he really didn't talk about it that much, but I think he just saw that it was not a high quality company or a high quality industry, really, because it wasn't so much the individual companies. And he didn't want to be involved in it. And he had been saying that for so many years and then changed his mind. And then I think had a little bit of like a come to Jesus of like, oh yeah, what I was doing before actually is what I agree with. And just moved on. And I find that so impressive.
It is the, and you guys, the advantage of following a master like that, you know, who is following a master himself, right? So Ben Graham to Warren Buffett, down the waterfall of time to us. The advantage of that is you get to see over a long period of time what that strategy and discipline manifests.
We're
in a financial world, you get to see it. It's not like, oh, I hope this all works out, or I can see why he would do that, but I don't know if that's a better idea than something else.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking at 90 years of this now, and you can get a pretty good idea in 90 years how this is working out and how it's worked out for thousands of people who have learned to do this from Warren. So
I mean, obviously, like, he's got to be making the right decisions for that to work out. He's got to be sticking with the good companies. It's not as easy as it sounds, as we say over and over.
It is as easy as it sounds at certain times.
At certain times, yeah.
Right now it's hard because the market's getting ready to get, I think, really tumbled, but we've thought that for a while. So my crystal ball is very, very dull looking. I can't see in it at all. But in terms of the market, But I know when it's hard to find companies and when it's hard to find easy companies. That's the key thing. The easy mm-hmm. companies, the ones that are mm-hmm. just a no-brainer. They come along once in a while, but boy, it's sure nice when the whole market just goes thud. Yeah. I just shut my recording off there for a second.
No, you're on. I see you.
When the market just hands you a big pile of wonderful businesses that you've already studied and you've looked at. I remember Warren saying in 2008 when Coca-Cola was going down like a brick and people in the audience of his annual meeting were just saying, why didn't you sell it when it was way high? It was obviously really high. And I remember Buffett just saying, we're just not nimble enough to dance in and out of companies like we used to be. He said, if I only had $1 million to work with, I could be making 50% a year. But having a huge amount of money is a huge detriment to rates of return. And he basically said, what we do instead is we just hope Coca-Cola goes down 50% so we can buy more. And we've got our list. We've got the companies we know. It just makes life so much easier if they'll just go down 50% from their value, and then we can snap them up. And that's the absolute essence of Rule One investing, is to buy these things that you know, wait patiently till they go on sale, don't do anything. Usually we don't. Not doing anything is usually the right thing. If you're not sure, don't do anything. And yeah, that's a good one. So on that sobering note of me taking a hit, I just want to pass along from Uncle Phil that you guys can learn from that a couple of things. Maybe do better work. And number two, when it's time to get out, get out. When the story changes, change the investment.
I like it.
All right.
So we might pick up Google next week. We want to kind of not spend 17 months on the same company. So
let's do something
we'll
else.
We'll see.
Let's chat about some.
Or maybe we'll do another one of the, what did we call them? The Kang companies or something? We
the
came
fangs.
Up with our own word.
The fangs, and now they're not.
No,
the
but we came
anymore.
Up with a different word because now it's Meta. I don't remember. Mangs. and Alphabet. Oh, the Moz. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Moz. But happy Labor Day to everybody in the U.S. and
time to go play.
Happy end of summer. Is that a good thing to say? Probably not. But
not yet.
Yay, September.
Not yet. All right, time to go play. See you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.